Hi, I'm Chen An Sor from Taiwan, and I've been to 77 countries.
That's Chen An Sor, a master's student at Minerva. This week, we're diving deep into Chen An's story on Humans of Minerva. Welcome to Humans of Minerva, a podcast which captures the interesting stories of humans at Minerva. I'm your host, Julia Ip, and today I'll be sitting down with Chen An Sor. Hey, Chen An.
Hi, Julia. Great to be here.
Thanks for joining us today. So you said you've been to 77 countries so far. I'm curious, what has inspired you to travel so much? And was it all, you know, in a condensed period of time or kind of over the years you've just accumulated a lot of travel stories?
I guess when you love something, you just keep doing it. Throughout my career and city, I have some natural breaks and I utilize them fully. For example, I finished my undergrad in 3.5 years, and I spent about 6 months traveling before starting my job, my first job. And between my first job and my MBA, there's another natural break. So, of course, I utilized that couple of months to travel to Tibet and a few other places. And when I finished my MBA, I happened to secure a job before graduation, but graduate in December, that means I have 8 months before all the banks start their associate program. So I spent 2 months traveling in South America, among other places. So I guess, again, if you like something enough, then you keep making ways for things to happen.
Yeah, I'm actually curious because I have some friends who, you know, when I talk about my travels, they're like, you know, I just don't have that urge to travel. And I'm curious, why do you think you have an urge to travel? Like, what do you think you get out of traveling?
Yeah, that's a good question. First, I love food. I'm blessed. I grew up in Taiwan, so I eat almost everything. I love to try the local cuisines. And I love, I mean, cliche, but I love meeting people, understanding culture. And it's different when you actually travel to their country and experience the whole package. And I think that's one of the appeal. And the other thing I love to do is I love connecting with people. And you would think that not being able to speak the language would make that less fun. I would say it makes it even more fun, right? Mm-hmm. Because then it's about body language. It's pulling out your calculator and trying to like punch in numbers. This is before a mobile phone, huh? I mean, I started traveling before a mobile phone. So there's something called Lonely Planet. It's actually a book that has a map in there, all the hostel and hotel recommendations, so different times and different eras.
Wow. I cannot imagine going and living in Seoul like I did at Minerva without Google Translate. Like, I think that was the one saving grace I had was, like, I would have my phone and I got really good at Google Translate. Right. They had, like, the Google Voice thing now, too.
Right.
So that's really helpful. So I don't know how you navigated different cultures and different languages without that. That's pretty impressive.
We probably have different experience though, right?
That is true. So you mentioned that you grew up in Taiwan. Can you tell me more about what it was like growing up there, what your family was like, what your support system was like in Taiwan?
Yeah, sure. I was born and raised in Taiwan until 16 and I left to go to US for high school. My parents are awesome people. And they're both dentists. They met in school, opened their own practice and everything. So I think what's really unique is when I was a kid, I didn't know how unique that was that my parents come home for dinner every single day at 7 p.m. And I have a younger brother, so four of us will sit down together and have a meal, like every single day. I'm like, yeah, that's dinner, right? Family eat together. But I think later I'll find out that that's not how every family works. And I actually really treasure that memory. So after I moved to the States.
Well, I guess backtracking a little bit, why did you move to the States?
Yeah, that was also a good one. My mom is she's a very unique person in the best way possible. Back in the days in Taiwan, I think they still do, they have this like entrance exam to get into like high school and later to college. So I just went through that. I mean, I still can't believe my parents put me through that exam and then tell me, oh, yeah, actually, we're going to the States. So did that. And my mom's like, oh, my God, that's so grueling. I was like, I went through it. Like, what's so grueling for for you? My mom's like, no, because you're like a total monster, right? You're like, you're a total tyrant because everything goes by your schedule. And then, of course, when you're like stressed, I was not a teenager, stressed, like not at the combo. So my mom's like, no, that's too stressful for me. If your younger brother needs to go through that same process into high school, and I will be doing that process to get to college, she's like, that's too much.
No,
I cannot handle it. Yeah. And then they really, that's one side of the story. The other side of the story is that my mom's side of family migrated to US pretty much right after I was born. So she didn't get time to really spend time with her parents. So she goes to the state to see them like every half a year, but that's not much, right? So she figured, oh, well, we'll move to the States. My brother and I can get a U.S. education. She gets to spend time with her parents, my grandparents, and us as kids get to meet our grandparents. So that's sort of the decision. And my dad actually stayed back and work. And that's, again, that is apparently a very typical setup among my friends. Like, one parent stay back, and usually mom take the kids to the States, New York, California, and it's just a huge sacrifice. I mean, I don't have a kid, but even if I have a kid, I don't think I'm going to do that for my kid. Yeah. I'm just like, are you kidding me? That's too much, right?
And where did you end up moving to in the States?
In New York, a suburb of New York. So it's actually Ruffin County. So if I drive from my neighborhood across George Washington Bridge and down to, say, Times Square, it would take about 45 minutes without serious traffic. So it's quite close to the city.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I actually had this reflection point a couple of weeks ago as well, where I was like, wow, I really enjoy my life right now. And I'm like, when I have kids, I just think back to what my parents did for me. Like, same thing. Like, I, as a kid, felt like, oh, I'm going through all these extracurriculars. I'm going through all these tests and exams, and, like, it's really hard for me. But then I think about, like, oh, my gosh, like, oh, my parents had to drive me, drop me off, pick me up to all these extracurriculars and schedule their schedule around my schedule. And I have two sisters, so all three of us. And I'm like, I don't know how I would do that while also working nowadays. So it's definitely, like, retrospectively, it's like, it is actually a lot. I totally understand why your mom was like, this is a lot.
Yeah. And I was not being a good kid about that either. Right? I was like, plenty of attitudes to go around.
Yeah. So you go to college, and what were you studying in college?
Yeah, I went to Carnegie Mellon University, and I did finance for my undergrad, so business. And I was that weird kid. Like, Julia, I'm just curious. Do you remember what you want to be when you were 10?
When I was 10? Oh, I wanted to be a CEO. I don't know of what. I didn't know what. I didn't know that you had to be a CEO of something. I just knew that CEO was a thing. Like, I just want to be the boss. You know, I had an older sister who was very bossy, so I'm like, I want to be the boss.
I see. That's really interesting. For me, at age 10, I told my parents I want to work on Wall Street. I have no idea, like, how that even come about, right? My parents are dentists. I mean, no one in my family are in banking, but I want to work on Wall Street. Somehow, in my mind, that's where power is, but you're almost invisible, right? Some people are power, they're very visible, like the president.
Yes.
But I'm like, no, I don't want people to know me. I just want to have the power, and then that's all good, right?
So, be rich and powerful, and no one knows you. Perfect.
Yeah, that'll be ideal. I mean, I so far I've achieved the no one knows me part, and not the rich and powerful part. Yeah. So I was very, very clear. I want to do a business degree and focus on finance. And I think, looking back to my choice of school, it was probably not the best fit for me because it's a relatively small school. It has a very engineering mindset. And it's actually quite forward-looking in terms of, like, designing their course to be, like, interdisciplinary, like, way back in the 90s. And I will forever remember this. I keep telling the story of how ahead CMU was and how I'm probably not ready for it. After the first semester, I was like, okay, all these math is killing me, right? I need a break. So let me take a class that is going to create some safe distance between me and math. And I'm like, okay, philosophy, safe, right? went to the class. After the first class, I dropped the class. Because the first thing, the very first question professor asked after taking attendance was, let's think. What if machine can think? And I'm like, are you for real? Can we talk about Aristotle, like Socrates, yeah. the good old stuff? Like, but that's fair, right? I mean, that's AI, that's machine learning, all that. But that's too much for me. And I think I probably would benefit from being part of a bigger school, bigger campus, and more diversity, so I can explore a little bit more. So I can get the AI-focused philosophy and the traditional philosophy.
Yeah. So you finished college, and now you're about to start your first job. Yeah. What was that job, and what was that like?
That was actually dramatic. I was looking for a job because I was graduating early. So I was looking for a job a little bit early, like, say, September 2001. So I remember September 11th very vividly. I was on campus, and all the recruiting events were canceled afterwards. Eventually, I get my Wall Street job. And when I get my final round interview in New York City, it was not even in their office because there's not an office, right?
It's wow.
held in held Midtown Hotel. Later, one of the guys I got to know, and he interviewed me at time. He's like, Jenna, do you know how stressful it is to, like, interview you guys during that period of time? I'm like, I don't know. How stressful can you be? Like, we should be the one who's stressed, right? Yeah. We're nervous. We really want a job, and the market is horrible. And they're like, no, like, HR gives us very, very specific instruction. Like, keep the door open at all time because we're in the hotel room, huh?
Yeah.
And then we're, oh. and then like, make sure your eyes yeah. at no time glance like towards a bed, or your body's not tilted to the bed. Like just the bed does not exist. No, it doesn't exist. Just make sure it doesn't. You don't move any part of your body into the other direction. You know, it's like, you know how hard that is. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's pretty hard. So that was a very unusual time. But I ended up working at Deutsche Bank and joined their analyst rotation program and started my Wall Street dream, working on 60 Wall Street.
Wow. I would never have thought about that either. Like, it's stressful to interview, I guess, in a hotel. So then, I mean, yeah, you're kind of in a hotel room.
Right.
And during that time too, that must have been very, like, turbulent yeah. as well. So working on Wall Street, you've achieved your, you know, your dream, your 10-year-old dream of right. working on Wall Street. Right. Now clearly you're not there anymore. So can you tell me more about what your experience was like working on Wall Street, and would you consider that a very pivotal moment of your life? Can you tell me more about what that was like?
Yeah, I think working on Wall Street is, it's kind of, also, like, the time is different, right? I mean, that was, yeah. like, early 2000. I think the work environment is, I mean, it's always a high-stress environment, right? If there's that much money moving around. I have a manager telling me that I'm going to give you all the ropes you need to hang yourself.
I'm like, what?
Ooh. As in, like, I'll give you a lot of room to grow, right? And you will also make mistakes. And some of the mistakes you make will get you fired. But you can.
Oh, my God.
Learn, right? And I'm like, yeah. Now I look back. I mean, back then I'm like, whoa, that's awesome, right? Thank you for giving me opportunity. Now it's like, ooh,
wait a second.
That's yeah. twisted. That's yeah, not quite right. So I would say one of the, I mean, I worked there in a rotational program on a trading floor. So I said, when a pivotal moment was like 3 years into it, I'm in burnout, and the abuse, the verbal abuse that happens on the regular basis on a trading floor. And it's not because I'm female or Asian or none of that. I mean, it's all the insults were like equally distributed, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, I remember the moment I was on my office on floor 34th floor, looking out a window. It's a floor to ceiling window and just kind of looking down the Wall Street. And I call my mom and I say, and I'm very, very close to my mom. And I said to her, like, okay, I'm not going to do anything. You don't need to worry, but I'm at the office, I'm looking out a window, and I can understand why people jump. And my mom said, oh, that's fantastic. I'm like, well, wait a second, did you not hear what I just said? I told you not to worry, but this is not a response I expected. And my mom said, that's great, because that's perfect clarity. You have to leave that job. Doesn't matter how much you feel like it took me so much effort to get this job. If I leave, I might never be able to come back. She's like, you just have to leave, right? You have nothing lined up, doesn't matter, right? You just have to leave. So I did the usual thing. I went back from my MBA, took some time off, had a great time, and then actually rejoined banking, but just...
but not Wall Street.
Yeah, it's a London office, so it's still a financial center, but not the Wall Street, right? Yeah,
hopefully a little less stress, though, than...
Different stress. I think time has changed a little bit, too. And also, I think the biggest part is the way I look at it, right? I mean, the reason why it was a pivotal moment, it was not because I feel like I want a job. That was not the state of mind I was in. It was more like... I really feel like I was not good enough, right? It's not even imposter syndrome. Like, I feel like sounding proves that on a daily basis, I'm reminded that I'm not good enough in a very open way, right? Okay. And it took me quite a few years afterwards to realize that it's not me. It's you. You as in the environment or the manager, right? Right. So it's nonetheless, right? At that moment, I was like, okay, I need to run away from this. Right, there's no fighting. It's definitely flight. But a few years later, looking back, I'll be like, okay, that's actually a great moment because I remember how I felt, and I would never want to feel that way ever again. And it hasn't. So
that's good.
Yeah,
I'm glad you had that moment of clarity, though. And however, it is very stressful to get to that point. But glad. So are you still in finance now?
After London, a few years in London, 2012, I finally my way back to Asia. And I left banking, per se, but I joined the vendor space. So in a way, I provide, in various jobs, I provide system or data or research to banks, brokerage, asset management firm, sovereign wealth firms. So that's still financial service, but not specific to banking.
Yeah, so you've had this like very long career so far, amazing career so far, lots of moments of clarity. And you're at Minerva for your master's degree now. Second master's, because you already did an MBA. Yeah. So just curious, with all this experience you have so far, why go to Minerva for a master's degree? And what are you planning to like get out of it? Like, how did you even arrive at this point?
Right. I'll try to tackle the what got me here. I actually don't know what I'm gonna get out of it. we should do this again, and then 2-3 years thought, what triggers me to want to apply to Minerva is, I think like all Minervans, I'm a very curious person. I'm just curious about this world, but increasingly I feel like I couldn't make sense of the world. Meaning, let's say healthcare system, right? In Taiwan, we have a world-class healthcare system, but like anything that's almost too good to be true, something bad is going to happen, right? So if we continue this way, it's going to go to the end of bankruptcy for sure, right? So what can you do? You raise a premium, okay? You reduce a benefit, that's possible. Okay, so all these are a policy angle, but like with all the data you collected over the past 20 plus years, and also there's other system you can reference to, like the NHS and UK and so on, you have all these data you can kind of harvest. And without looking to data, surely you cannot make a good policy decision. And for me, I feel with the amount of data that's involved in any kind of decision, if I don't have the capability even to know a little bit about programming so I can direct a team of programmers to sieve through the data, clean it up, and then apply statistical analysis tool to it to make sense of it. How do I get to the decision-making part?
Right? Yeah.
So I think I'm fascinated by how to make the best decision possible with the human angle, right? I mean, yeah, machine can probably make the best decision, but that's not what I'm interested in, right? I like that human touch to it. So that's what I like to explore more, but without the data part, without the programming part, I just don't think it's possible. So I'm like, okay, maybe it's time. If you recall, my undergrad experience was quite traumatic, and the worst, absolute worst course I took was a C++ language class. It still gives me chills. Oh my God. And I decided to kind of counter my fear and give it a try. And I've heard great things about Professor Minerva. So I feel like if they cannot teach me this, no one else can. So let me give myself this one last chance to learn programming and decision and how these two actually tie up together.
Very cool. And you have how many years left of your master's?
I just started this year, so still a bit of time to go.
Yeah. So I'm curious. Yeah, you seem like a very curious person. You've also had, I think you have really interesting perspectives on things. I'm just curious, like, how did you become you? Like, were there particularly, like, any people, certain people in your life that really influenced your way of thinking? Because, I mean, I find this also with a lot of other Minervans as well. They're just, like, very curious, very much thinkers, like, to think a lot, not just do, but, like, question why a lot. And, like, where does that come from? So where did that come from for you?
I'm not sure I have the answer. I think, if anything, my parents didn't stifle my curiosity. I think they definitely did that for me. And I'm going to tell you something a little bit crazy about myself. I think since when I was not teeny tiny, but like probably a child, I think there is that remote possibility that I'm not from this planet. And I still think that's a possibility. So I behave or think differently from most people. It's almost a given because, hello, I might not be from this planet, right? So I think that helps me to explore my curiosity. And be, I wouldn't say I'm brave to be different. I'm just like, I'm just who I am. And I don't care as much about the norms or the expectations probably other Earthlings do. So
is your brother also similar to you or like very different? Is it also possible that he's from another planet or is he like definitely an Earthling?
I don't know. I had to check with him. I think he's more Earthling than I am, but there might be another side of him I haven't uncovered.
Cool. Well, in all this, all these years of, you know, trying to find more about yourself, understand more about yourself, explore the world, what is one piece of advice that has stuck with you? What is something that you've learned?
Yeah, I'll give you two. I'll double it up. And these are two things I think I'm holding close to my heart these days. One is have a plan, but hold it lightly. And the second one is, don't think about how, think about who. When it comes to you encounter something, right? It's natural for you to be like, how do I solve this? How do I do it, right? Think about who. Not necessarily who can help you, but like, who might have already solved this? And then going back to that philosophy class, I never go beyond the second class. I think a lot of the struggles I'm having, a lot of people are having, it's been solved by Western philosophy or Eastern philosophy. It's just that we didn't know. So think about who, not how.
Interesting. I like those two learnings. And about yourself too, is there something that you've learned about yourself along this way? You know, when do you feel the most yourself? And is there anything that you've learned yet about yourself?
What I've learned about myself is as much as I spend the time and effort to reflect and talk to myself, I'm still wrong on a lot of things. Like not about the world, but about myself. So right now, actually, I'm on a 14-month self-created sabbatical and counting. I don't have a sort of deadline for that, end day for that. And I thought I would be really happy just doing things that interest me, like coaching, exploring coaching and training, all of that. And 14 months in, I kind of missed the structure and resources come with the corporate job. I didn't think that was possible. I thought it would take me at least 3-4 years before I get to where I am today in terms of how I feel towards a corporate job. So I think if there's one thing I learned about myself is prepare to be wrong and be okay, because have a plan, but hold it lightly, right?
Yes. Yeah. I love that. All right, so we talked about the past. We've talked about, you know, right now you're doing your master's. So I want to see, what do you want to explore more of? Like, what's your future like?
I wish I have an easy answer for that, because I'm really now spending time thinking about what is a future Chenin would be happy with. I would say a few elements. One is I'm continuing learning, and it's not just learning. I need to share it too, just to sort of complete the circle. I know some people, they love learning. And for me, I love learning, but without sharing, it's not complete for me. So that would need to continue. I also need to find a balance between the impact and the monetary rewards I receive. I would say previously I thought, well, I'm lucky enough to achieve. So in theory, I don't need to work to make a living. And I thought, well, you know, I just take on any job that has the maximum impact, but I don't care about the monetary reward. But actually what I'm finding out, it's actually important to me. Because for better or worse, money is a very concrete way to measure. And in our society, that's how I can know if I'm truly adding value, right? Depends on how much they're willing to pay. So I haven't been able to entangle these two. I know some people who probably have broke through that kind of nod for me. I come to realization being rewarded monetarily is still an important element on top of making an impact. So yeah, those are the two things I think I want to work on and continue working on now into the future. And hopefully in 10 years time, I'll find that balance and making plenty of impact, be rewarded accordingly, and gonna continue learning and sharing.
Yeah. When you say impact, what kind of impact are we talking about? Or like what areas of impact are you interested in?
Right. I think for me, let me put it this way. I have great admiration for people who just, you know, want to solve really big problem and just help a lot of people. I find it difficult for me to care about people outside of my kind of extended circle.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, like, sure, like 6 degrees of separation, right? I mean, so maybe like for me, I care about 1 to 2 degree, like that's big enough, right? For me, the impact would be I'm doing coaching. I do life coaching. I do sales, like because my background, I do like business communication coaching, sales coaching. And for me, that's meaningful. I see how I can help in my client from, whoa, okay, I'm super overwhelmed. I don't know even how to think about things, to like getting clarity after 3-4 sessions. That to me is the type of impact I really care about. Like I need to be able to see it. And it's not a number. I need to connect with the person and feel like, yeah, for at least for those time we spend together, there's an impact.
Cool. So yeah, I know you talked about, you know, money being somewhat important, being an element. But if no one in the world was making money, if that wasn't a currency or an indicator of value, what would you be doing? Like, would you be doing coaching still and like coaching and teaching?
Yes, yes. Because that definitely fit the impact. Take that impact box, right? I just feel like for example, I can do coaching, but I do in-house, right? Yeah. If I'm part of a corporate, then the monetary reward would be more measurable. And I still see impact, right? So I'm coaching a sales team. So I can see how a team really perform, really unlock the potential, right? So I think that's, to me, it goes hand in hand. I cannot think of myself being in a role that it's just monetary kind of reward without any impact. Like I wouldn't even consider it. I wouldn't even go near it.
So that's interesting that you're coaching right now, right?
Yeah.
So I guess after you get that master's, the master's is more of just your own curiosity of learning how to make decisions, less so like a career pivot or anything like that.
Yeah. If somehow it adds to my career pivot, it'll be fantastic. It could be through my fellow classmates, right? The connection I made. It could be interesting conversation with professor or with anyone. I think I'm open to that. I'm actually inviting that possibility. I'm asking the universe, please give me that. But without it, I'm not counting on it, right? That's I think the degree is more for me to learn something different. And if career pivot as to it, then that would be icing on the cake.
Cool. Very cool. All right. Well, it is now nearing the end of our episode, and okay. We usually end with a fast fire round of questions. Are you ready
should I be nervous?
So I'm going to ask you a series of around 5 questions, and you're just going to respond with the first thing that comes to mind.
Okay. Let's do it.
While walking, music or podcast?
Podcast.
Ooh. Book or ebook?
Book.
Dogs or cats?
100% dog.
What is your spirit fruit?
Banana.
Banana. Okay, I do want an explanation for that one.
Yeah. I think it's a very well-designed fruit, right? It comes with its own packaging, right? It's fully organic, it's protected. And I like to eat my banana a little bit when it's still a little bit chewy. Well, I know people like it when it's soft, right? So I feel like even if I don't like it, I could give it to someone will enjoy it. So it's very versatile.
Yeah, okay. And what is your word of the day?
Breathe.
I like that word. All right. Thank you so much, Tenen. Let's wrap up this episode. Tenen, what's the best way for our audience to reach you if they want to connect or follow-up questions?
I would say email to my Minerva email address, which is just my last name, Saur, Saur, at minerva.edu.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show, Tenen. It was such a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
It's great chatting with you, Julia. Thank you for having me.
Be sure to subscribe to this podcast and automatically get notified about new episodes on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at humansandminerva.podcast for all the latest updates and announcements. And finally, special thanks to our editor, Ang Lilian, for working her magic on this episode. Thanks for listening to Humans of Minerva.